All right, welcome to the season premiere of the Hardwood Huddle, the NBA season. Well, it's almost right upon us. And with me, as always, senior NBA analyst from BackSportsPage.com and the NBA Yoda himself, Bill Ingram, Randy Zellia from BackSportsPage. You guys can follow the show through BackSportsPage.com and wherever you've listened to your podcasts, whether it's YouTube, Amazon Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. We're there. That's what you need to know, is that we are there to quench the NBA hoops thirst that you have. And guys, but Bill, I got to tell you, man, you and I had a little vision of what we were going to start talking about up until about maybe 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Hours ago?
Yeah, 1 o'clock in the afternoon yesterday, we were like, yeah, we'll get to it. And it's like, okay, Damian Lillard, we're going to send you to Milwaukee. And boom, and there we go. And that changes everything. We had to get on here and we had to start up. And look, the deal, you and I had been talking about the deal for months. And I think everybody's been talking about the deal for months. Was it, how surprised were you with who got what and who went where? And that the Phoenix Suns actually became a player and the Milwaukee Bucks became a player in this thing? Because for months it's been Brooklyn, Miami, and
Toronto.
Yeah. And even as of yesterday, ESPN reported that the Raptors were a serious contender for this.
Yeah, imminent, right? It was an imminent deal with the Raptors. And then all of a sudden, what? Milwaukee? Oh, well, hey, let me tell you something. They just offered Giannis Antetokounmpo his maximum contract extension. And the best way to do that is say, and by the way, now you have an all-star point guard to play with, which is the Bucks organization saying, we are committed to you. We're committed to giving you the best teammates possible. And the way we're going to do it is by getting the best and only great player available in the marketplace. And they went and got him, and they didn't have to give up Chris Middleton, which was great. The only question there is the question Portland would have had, or Miami, is how healthy is Damian Lillard going to be? In Milwaukee, yeah, he doesn't have to do the things he doesn't do well. He doesn't have to carry the load. When he has to do all the scoring, he doesn't play defense. Well, great. Now you're actually a point guard. You can actually set up Giannis, and you're not going to have to fight through defense because all the defense is going to be worried about him. You can have the opportunity to catch and shoot all day long because the defense is going to have to collapse to try to prevent Giannis from doing his thing. You also have a great center to play with, Brooke Lopez. You also have Chris Middleton on the wing. I mean, I know Damian Lillard wanted to go to Miami. Maybe it's the weather, but if you have a choice between playing with Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo or Giannis Antetokounmpo and Brooke Lopez and Chris Middleton, that's a really easy choice to make. There.
And not only that, but if Giannis takes a night off or whatever the load management crap is for that week, and he can still have two other running mates in there. If any of those guys take a day off, he's going to have two other running mates there. Whereas if in Portland, he was the only guy when he was healthy.
Yeah.
So that's a big thing too. And real quick, let's just go over the terms of the trade. Portland received Drew Holiday, DeAndre Ayton from Phoenix. I'm going to butcher this name, so I apologize now. Tumena Kamara, Milwaukee's 2029 unprotected first round pick, and the right to swap picks with him with Milwaukee in 28 and 2030. Phoenix received Nurkic, Grayson Allen, Nazar Little, and Keon Johnson as part of the trade package. So Woj also reported that the Blazers are expected to engage in contending teams on trade talks to move Holiday's. Yeah, and so I like the deal for all three teams. Phoenix got their depth. Phoenix got more help for those three stars, which you and I were sitting there saying, how are they going to pull that off?
Yeah,
this is how they do it. They go out and make a great deal. Nurkic is going to be great for them. Oh my Lord, his big thing is making sure he can play over 50 games. That's going to be where his biggest problem is. You can tell they had fallen out of love with Ayton. That was
because they've been shopping him ever since they signed him to his contract extension.
Yes, it went from we're going to go to the NBA Finals. We made the NBA Finals, a sign right here. Oh, but there's better options out there, so let's try and still do that. And you can't have your cake and eat it too, and that's what they were trying to do there.
Well, Nurkic is a player who is going to relentlessly pursue rebounds, which Ayton did not. And he's a guy that's more like, you know, if you give me the ball and I'm in a position to score, I will. If not, that's fine. I'll defend. I'll rebound. That's the guy they need with all those shooters. You know, there aren't going to be too many touches for Nurkic unless it's an offensive rebound, which there might be a few. So whereas Ayton was like, oh, my touches, my stats, and then he wouldn't chase a rebound. Like, seriously, you want to talk about touches? Go touch the ball. Like,
well, not that, but the guy to watch that Phoenix acquired is Keon Johnson. He's going to be a great swing for them. He can handle the ball. That's going to be the exact guy they need because those three scorers obviously are going to get major attention, but you need someone to help facilitate, and Keon Johnson will be able to do that. But the other thing, and knowing that Durant doesn't play a lot of games, knowing that Bradley Beal doesn't play a lot of games, Keon Johnson's also going to have a lot of time on the floor to show his skills playing with guys who are much better than him. So, you know, he's going to have to play up to their level. So when this big three experiment falls apart, when it does or when it ends, Keon Johnson's going to be that much better of a player because he's so young and so good. You can see
don't sleep on Grayson Allen, too, who's been a great role player around the league for a while. So,
yeah, I think that was a great piece in there, too. And look, draft capital has really diminished over time. We know that, you know, it's more of like, it doesn't matter if you're a first round pick or a second round pick, you can be a star in this league, or you can be undrafted and be a star in this league, or they can go down to the G League, which we're going to talk about later on, and have success.
Partial segue.
The two teams, obviously, that were sort of left out in the cold, there was a couple different reports out there that the agent of Dame Lillard said, don't let it known that, you know, Milwaukee and the Nets are a destination of his, and that's how Milwaukee got in there. Apparently the Nets had pulled themselves out of conversations months ago for Lillard, which I think was a great idea. Now, if you want my honest opinion, we'll talk about Brooklyn in a couple seconds, but just finishing up where Drew Holiday, because now that's a whole nother conversation where he's going to go. I think Drew Holiday would fit perfect in Brooklyn, and which would push Spencer Dinwiddie into the combo guard spot. And I don't think you have to give up much to get him. So
And probably draft capital. You know, Portland's not looking at being a good team, obviously, although Ayton's a little puzzling. But
yeah,
Drew Holiday, when I heard it, I was like, okay, so Drew Holiday is going to groom Scoot Henderson. That's good for Scoot. Not so good for Drew. You know, it's time to win. And he's been on a championship team. He's been a winner in his career. And to have him then go, to quote one of my favorite baseball movies, go hold the flavor of the month stick in the bus league, name that movie, is kind of a slap in the face to Drew. So obviously all the teams are now talking about, well, does he land in Miami? Does he land in Boston? Does he land, you know, every team. So we'll see what happens. But I suspect he'll wind up on a playoff team for sure.
Yeah, and I can't say that Brooklyn's in the conversation of a deep playoff team or a winning situation right now. And we'll talk about them as we do our league roundup in a few minutes. Listen, I'll be the first one to come out and say this. You look at this deal, and Milwaukee won the deal. You and I had this conversation that up until 1 o'clock yesterday, the Lakers won the offseason because they put themselves back in a position to compete for a championship. Yep. Out of all the teams that made moves, they were the ones who got significantly better with what their goal is. Now I feel totally differently and thinking that Milwaukee has totally changed the game. That's how I feel.
Well, I do, because if you look at the Eastern Conference, Philadelphia, James Harden is going to be the monkey wrench in their works no matter what happens. They're already saying he's not going to show up for media day. Will he show up for camp? I don't know. Right now he's trying to add 30 pounds so that when he does show up, he's not useful, kind of like he did in Houston. But that's just going to be a huge distraction and a huge problem. And Daryl Morey deserves it. Joel Embiid does not. Maxey does not. Tobias Harris does not. It's not fair to the team. But no, that's definitely what Harden's about to put them through. And Daryl Morey should have seen it coming because he's already had it come. At the same time, you've got Boston, who is banking their next level. They're actually winning a championship hopes on Kristaps Porzingis, which has not been a winning venture anytime. And not that he's not an extra. I mean, hell, when he came to Dallas, I thought, wow, Dirk had just retired. They're very similar players. And I thought maybe, you know, if he could stay healthy, you've got this incredible duo to play with. Problem is he doesn't stay healthy. He's never healthy. He's already hurt. He hasn't even started the season and he's hurt.
Yeah.
So Boston, I think, is going to really suffer there. If they wind up trading Brogdon and Horford for Drew Holiday, which is one of the many things that's running around, now you don't even really, when you take Horford out, now when Porzingis is hurt, you don't have Horford put in there. So I think Boston's going to have problems. Philly's going to have problems. And, of course, Miami let key free agents go because they assumed, kind of like the makers of NBA 2K assumed, that's where he was going to be. And now Lillard's not there and Miami is screwed.
Well, I'm not too worried about Miami because the two guys that they let go, yes, were key to their NBA Finals run, but they were undrafted players anyway. So like, you know, you'll have guys who can fit that culture. That's the one culture I'm pretty confident with that. Okay. Yes. You lost these two guys. You're going to be able to put other two guys. You're going to place other guys right back in. You didn't have Tyler Hero throughout this whole entire playoff run.
Right.
I think you already got Struce's replacement right there. You know, you're putting Hero right back in there.
Well, he's an all-star, right?
Yeah, he's an all-star.
He's worth Damian Lillard.
apparently, you're only worth what someone's offered to give you for him. And I think the two teams that you left out of the East are the two teams that sort of stayed the course with minor pieces that they've added were the Knicks and the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Knicks, you just don't know. Like, if you're a Knicks fan, you just wait for the team to blow up. Like, you were waiting for it last year. I congratulate Tom Thibodeau, because Tom Thibodeau has been at the same place now for 4 years, or this is going to season four. He hasn't been exiled yet. It's probably coming this season now that I say it. But look, at the end of the day, the Knicks didn't really do a lot. I know there was a lot of people hoping that they were going to move Julius Randle. The Knicks were hoping that they were going to move Julius Randle. I think Julius Randle thought Julius Randle was going to get moved. I think at the end of the day, you have to accept what a player is on your team. There's many Knicks fans who only look at things through orange glasses, like thinking that you're going to be able to trade, you know, at the time I heard this thought process. You're like, oh yeah, you can, you know, make a deal and possibly get like Anthony Davis or Mitchell Robinson and a couple of draft picks. I was like, oh, we're really putting Mitchell Robinson up here, aren't we now? Look, at the end of the day, the Knicks and the Cavs pretty much stayed put. You and I have both said you need a Udonis Haslam-like player who's got the experience. Not Udonis Haslam himself, but a player that has a playoff experience and has been through the wars to go to Cleveland to work with that team, to be a part of that roster that can help them go through. Someone like the guy they got rid of in Kevin Love.
Yeah, well, because they've got all the pieces,
it's frustrating.
You look at them on paper and you think, man, Cleveland, last year at this time, we were saying, man, Cleveland, they're going to be good. Donovan Mitchell, like, look at the, okay, Cleveland, and then they were very Atlanta is what they were. Like, yeah, a lot of pieces, they look good on paper, then the game starts, and...
And then you're like, but, but then you say, but. And then, like, it's hard because you look at Donovan Mitchell, you look at Jared Allen, who I think they're going to move on from this year. You have Evan Mobley. Darius Garland. You have these pieces, and you're just like, how are they not dominating? But the problem is they're young. Donovan Mitchell's still young. You know, they're all young, and that's a very, very big thing. You know who I would welcome back? And I think they did, but I'm not 100% sure. Maybe you can correct me. I thought... A guy like Anderson Varejao, who still wants to play in the NBA, I think he'd be a great fit for that team. Big guy who's been through the wars, who understands it. Great, great player to have there.
Yeah, and he came up in that Brazilian program. That's
He'd be a perfect fit. Beloved in Cleveland. Beloved.
Yeah, he played 13 years in Cleveland. He's not back. Is that what you're asking?
I there was a piece of me that felt like I thought he was there last year, but he wasn't. So.
Last time he played was 2021.
Yeah, he's been out of the league for a couple of years now. Then you have the Nets, which, well, okay, well, you know, obviously I put a lot of focus on that team if you follow me on Twitter and understand. And I just so you guys know, if you guys follow me on Twitter, I am very sporadic now because X is not the spot for me.
It's the interface is not, I don't know, on the, when you're on the computer, it's black in the background. Like, I don't know. It's, and you're just waiting for it to go away, or they're going to start charging for it, or I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what they're doing with it, but look, the Nets, if Ben Simmons comes back and like you, I don't know if you've been seeing online that the hype for him has been very,
Yes. Looks like he did his all-star. Blah, 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 blah. That's great. Let me see it on the court.
Right.
If he comes, if he's they're coming, saying all that to hype up his trade value and, you know, whatever, I'm waiting to see it actually on the court. That's it. Show me.
If he can come back and be on the court, then you can move Dinwiddie onto the bench, but Ben at the point guard, and you become a very, very viable team. The Nets' biggest problem is they don't have depth in the front court. Mm-hmm. You have Nick Claxton, and he looks around and says, "Why am I the tallest guy here?" Yeah. And he's only like 6'9", 6'10". So he really grew as a player when Durant and Irving left. And if you watched him in the Philadelphia playoff series, you saw he was going toe to toe with Embiid, and he was really making things difficult for the MVP. You know what I mean? Like, he was really just in his face the whole entire time, and it was very difficult for Embiid to move around. I don't know. I think it's going to be very interesting to see what happens with Brooklyn. They were a below 500 team after the two trades with getting rid of Durant and Irving. Mm-hmm. So we have to really figure out who that team really is. And the same thing sort of goes with Atlanta. We had heard multiple reports that Trae Young and Devontae Murray, let's just put it, they're not sending each other Christmas cards. Let's just put it that way. It's not working out between the two of those guys.
Mostly the Hawks are trying to figure out if they could deal Trae Young and not totally lose the fan base, you know, like.
Well, you know, that's the hard part, right? Like, the hard part is, it doesn't matter who your star is. Like, you look at a guy like Trae Young, you look at a guy like Luka or anybody else like that. If you decide you want to make a move for whatever the reason, like, look what Portland's going to go through now, not having Damian Lillard. Like, me personally, for the community that I'm in, for the basketball program, we're doing a big group outing to the Nets Blazers game, and the kids were excited to go see Damian Lillard. And then yesterday, they're just like, oh, crap. You know, Scoot Henderson jerseys, baby. Get them while they're hot.
He says he's going to be rookie of the year.
You ask any NBA rookie if they're going to be rookie of the year, they're all going to tell him, yeah. Sam Cassell said he was going to be rookie of the year. I don't want to hear it. Nothing personal, Sam. Nothing personal. So with that being said, so Atlanta has some issues, like. If they decide to move Trae Young, Devontae Murray is a better player, overall player, than Trae Young is. Trae Young, in that Celtics series last year, hit that spot, like hit that game winner. There was no way when they went back to Atlanta for game six that I think Atlanta was going to win in game six.
No.
There was no way that was going to happen. So they have to figure out who they're building around and then what the pieces they would need to help build. And I think that's where their biggest problem is. Then you just discussed Miami. Miami is going to be, we have to watch. We just have to watch. I think their attitude is, we just have to make it to the playoffs and we'll make a run.
Yeah. I mean, it worked for them last year.
Yeah. Yeah. Charlotte, the teams that didn't make it in last year, Charlotte, Indiana, you know,
but he held. Where's he going to go? What are they going to get for him? Yeah, right, you're not going to bring Bruce Brown off the bench after you just overloaded his contract like that. He's got to start. So, yeah. Buddy Hield, why haven't you already dealt him? Is a really big question. Like, if you look at their depth chart, it's ridiculous.
All right, so let's try it this way. I'm going to go through the Eastern Conference real quick. You're going to tell me better or worse. And why? So, almost half your class. Okay. The Detroit Pistons.
I'll say better only because you have more draft talent. You have another year. I don't know. It'd be hard to be worse. I still don't know what their direction is, but they almost have to be better, don't they? I mean,
yeah,
that's the whole idea. I think so.
Don't know.
Irrelevant is my overall answer about Detroit.
Okay. I think they're going to be better. Monty Williams. Yeah. Monty Williams is a great coach.
He's great.
Yeah. Yep. And I think
he's fabulous.
And after a little while, when you keep drafting all that talent, eventually it's going to start panning out for you.
Yeah.
So I think you need the right guy to sort of right the ship. I think he might be the guy. I think they're going to be better. They're not going to be a playoff team, but I think they're just going to be improved. I think Monty alone
makes them plus +5.
Yeah. I agree with that. I think this is the year that they're learning, not losing. I think they're just losing last year. I think this is the year they're learning, but not losing.
Right.
The Charlotte Hornets. I'll go first on this one. I think they're going to be better as long as they're going to go as far as LaMelo takes them. And he has to be healthy. He missed a lot of games last year. You don't want to put all your you don't want to hang this cart on Gordon Hayward and Terry Rozier. You don't want to do that.
No, and I like I want to see what Bridges is going to do after he serves that suspension. What are they going to keep him? Is he going to come back with a vengeance? It's hard to see whether that's going to be a positive or a negative, but PJ Washington's back. I mean, Charlotte has nice pieces too. They just, like you said, LaMelo, they have injury issues. They had the suspension issue. Like, how do you play through all of that? Mitch Kupchak has always done well as a general manager, but Charlotte, man, you're running uphill like constantly. They're just always battling mediocrity.
Yeah, it's very true. That last time they made the playoffs is when they had the Jeremy Lin,
Gerald Wallace, Felton.
Yep.
Yeah, Steven Jackson, and they were the Bobcats, and I was there.
Yeah, it was a very very
I
good team
that playoff series because I knew all those guys.
The next team is an interesting one, the Orlando Magic. I think they're going to be better. They finished off the season a lot better. The guys were enjoying playing with each other. That's a young team. I love their coach. I think their coach does a very, very good job with them. I think they're going to be much better.
I agree. I see them as a plus +5 to plus +10 range. I think, you know, they've, like you said, at the end of the season last year, this is kind of what I look at with OKC. They were trending up, right? And I really like the talent that's there at Banchero. I mean, I hear they're going to maybe move on from Anthony, but my gosh, I love the talent in that locker room. It's just a matter of it coming together and having a veteran who will kick their butts and, you know, kick them up to the next level to teach them winning. But, man, that's one of the teams to watch over the next 5 years for sure.
Yeah, the Orlando Magic should be. I look at them possibly getting a play-in spot this year.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The Washington Wizards. Look, they pretty much. if there's ever a team that's clamoring to get the number one pick this year, I'm looking at the Wizards to be the bottom of the conference. I think they're going to be worse than they were. You got rid of Bradley Beal. You got rid of Porzingis. You didn't get much back for either one of them. This is
not like Detroit where they're irrelevant for that reason. This is Detroit minus the draft talent, minus the head coach, minus what is Washington doing?
I have no idea what they're doing. I don't think they know what they're doing. I think their general manager is actually taking bets with people. Said, oh yeah, you don't think I'm going to do this? Well, watch this.
Yeah.
You don't think this team can get screwed up anymore? Here, hold my beer. Let me show you how to do it. Okay. Mm-hmm. The Indiana Pacers. Indiana Pacers is an interesting team. I think that Halliburton and some of these other guys that they have there, Miles Turner.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Carlisle is a good coach.
Yep.
I think they'll be back. I think they're going to be in a play-in spot this year. I think they will definitely be a play-in spot.
Yeah, I think so. Miles Turner is another player that we hear mentioned constantly in trade rumors, but for all of that, he's a modern day center. You're not going to put the ball in his hands and say, go get me buckets, but he's going to rebound. He's going to defend. And when you've got shooters like they have, he's a great backstop. I don't know what it is about him that has them not totally sold on him, but you got Mathurin. Now you've got Brown. You've got your finals experience, guy that comes in, and maybe he can instill some on-court, you know, veteran winning advice, you know, that X factor that every team needs. Maybe. I don't know, but hey, and if they can move Buddy Hield and get another piece at another position that helps, then I like Indiana. They have the talent and they have star power. And as you mentioned, and I've known Rick Carlisle a long time, I think he's the second best head coach in the league behind Popovich. And I think it would take something would have to go really wrong for them to miss the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree with that too. They need to have a total injury breakdown to not be there.
Yeah.
Since we attacked the top part of the Eastern Conference, we'll do the last two that we didn't touch. The Toronto Raptors, man, if there is any team that you look at and you're just confused on what they're trying to do, whether it's rebuild or reload, man, it's the Toronto Raptors. I don't know. I look at them to be in the bottom half of the Eastern Conference, the bottom part. They need direction. And poor Siakam and Scottie Barnes and those guys, they need to find a way to get out of Toronto because their management team has no idea what they're doing right now.
Well, that's why they were going after Damian Lillard, because they felt like if they got Lillard and they had Barnes and Siakam, now they're up a notch, and they would have been. But you pretty much had to lose Barnes or Siakam. I think Portland wanted Barnes.
A lot of teams do. A lot of teams
right.
do.
And a lot of teams want Siakam too, including Dallas. I think everybody called them about Siakam. So yeah. They don't want to deal them. They haven't put a serious, like the team around them is not all that. So yeah, I think they're bottom half of the East for sure. Maybe not even a playoff team, although I think they're a playoff team, but they're not going anywhere for sure.
No, they're definitely not going anywhere. And the final team, the Chicago Bulls, they won their play-in game last year to play the second night against the Miami Heat. And I got to tell you, the Bulls, I'm trying to figure out which Chicago Bull team this roster really is. Is it the year before where they made the playoffs and were the fourth seed and they were making a lot of noise? Or is it the team that looked at times last year like they just played such ugly basketball that shouldn't be even playing? I think they're going to get worse. I think there's going to be a fire sale at one point. I don't think DeMar DeRozan's finishing his career as a member of the Chicago Bulls. I think they took a chance on Alonzo Ball, and that now has blown up in their face. They have never really seen what this team was supposed to be when they made all these moves, and now they're stuck in purgatory again.
Yep, it's unfortunate because that team too, there's really interesting talent there, Vukovic, and if Lonzo Ball ever got healthy, which I don't know if that's ever going to happen, but yeah, I think 2 years ago was their moment, and then they've fallen off since then, and it's another situation where, you know, chemistry's got to be right. And in the interview, we're going to talk to Sharif Abdul-Rahim about this. He was a great player throughout his career, but only made the playoffs once and they lost. And it wasn't because of him. It's because you have to have, there's a special magic combination that has to come together for a team to really be great. And it does, no matter what the roster looks like, the roster can look amazing and still that little essence doesn't click. And that's what Chicago is an example of that, as much as any team, because yeah, again, on paper, like, hey, that's a top four team. And then they start playing and it's like, what are they doing? Yeah.
Well, with that being said, we just broke down the whole Eastern Conference. On our next episode, we'll break down the Western Conference. But right now, when we come back from break, we are going to have an exclusive interview with the president of the G League, the one and only Sharif Abdul-Rahim. We mentioned him before. We had a great talk with him. A little disclaimer on this interview right now, the way we record our shows, you see this awesome background on the basketball court. We taped the interview through Zoom, and one of the NBA PR members is listed on there. So please don't email him. Please don't bother him when you're watching this interview. Just listen to the interview. We really broke down the G League and talked about some great things from Sharif's career, and which you will hear when we come back here on the Hardwood Huddle. Randy Zelia, Bill Ingram here with, I want to use the word legend because I think it's appropriate. And to my kids, he's a legend because he had, they have all of his cards, including his rookie card and everything like that. The president of the G League, former NBA All-Star, Sharif Abdulrahim. Sharif, thanks so much for giving us some time this morning. Honor and pleasure to speak with you. And, you know, as we were just talking before we started recording this call, you know, you have had an amazing NBA career, and I think it is the proper example for the younger kids who are coming into the G League to understand the work that they have to put in to get to that level. But for your story, can you talk about, I guess, just entering the NBA from when you were drafted, especially at the high number you were as a draft, just the amount of work that some of these kids don't understand that has to be put in. Number three, you know, being a lottery pick like that, what advice do you usually give knowing what you had to go through and your reaction, of course, being drafted around that point?
Yeah, one first, Randy, Bill, thank you for having me. It's just great to be with you. To your question, you know, I think of draft day, or, you know, those couple of days leading up to the draft where you and your family are traveling into the draft, and, you know, if you're in the green room, that process, you know, even the day after where you're going to the city and you're meeting everyone, that is, you know, like, that's the culmination of just kind of a lifetime to that point of, you know, work and sacrifice and everything. And it's a celebration of, you know, that time, right? Like, that's what it is. You should celebrate it. You should enjoy it. You should reflect. But then I think, like, you know, again, the day after the press conference, like, it's work, you know. And I think, you know, it's a responsibility when you drafted that high. It's really a responsibility to the people that believed in you, the people that drafted you, that you go and try to be the best version of yourself. And sometimes you don't even think, you just, you know, about the best version of yourself. You want to be great and you want to achieve and you want to have success. So, you know, that's, for me, that's what it was. I was looking up to my peers, like my contemporaries at that time was, you know, like Kevin Garnett or Antoine Walker, you know, Iverson, Marbury, you know, Kobe. Those are the guys that were drafted around the time I was, that I was, you know, I went up against in high school. So, like, that's what you're always, you know, looking and peeking and trying to keep up with, you know, your peers. You want to help your organization, and you want to, you know, true professionals, true players, guys that love the game, they want to keep getting better. They, you know, they okay, now I got drafted, you know, now I want to be a good player. You know, now I want to be an all-star. Now I want my team, you know, I want my team to, you know, get in the playoffs. I want to get to the, you know, conference finals. I want to, you know, so I don't think that if you have that, you know, in you, I don't think that, you know, just, you know, being drafted, I don't think that changes.
Was there extra responsibility in that process being drafted as you were by the Vancouver Grizzlies, basically a fresh expansion team, and trying to win over a city and a country even?
Yeah, that part I didn't appreciate at the time because I was so young. You know, all of what comes, you know, with one being drafted high, but then also being drafted to, you know, I was drafted the second year of the organization, right? And, you know, basketball, you know, what we think of basketball in Canada now you have Toronto that's won a championship. I was having this conversation with Larry Tannenbaum recently of just, like, how big basketball has become in Canada and all the great young players that have come from Canada. And it's a result of the NBA going there and the Raptors and everything that they've done, the time that Vancouver was there. But you just don't have an appreciation for that. But 100% is like, you're an ambassador of the game, because at that time we were, like, teaching people about the game, you know, you know, trying to be gracious and, you know, spend time with fans. But then you still, again, you want to be a good player. So 100%, it was, you know, it's a responsibility. And I think all young players have that. They don't, you know, you don't totally appreciate the impact that you have on people. And if you would, not to go long, you know, I received letters, you know, recently I received a letter from a young lady from Vancouver. And, you know, she was very young at the time, and her family had, like, immigrated to Canada, to Vancouver, when she was really young. And, you know, part of, like, her kind of getting, you know, culminating and arriving in Canada was, you know, the Grizzlies. And that was something that her family did together, and it kind of helped her, you know, as she's explaining in the letter, you know, grow and kind of get situated. And, you know, what the Grizzlies meant to her, and I was her favorite player, she was explaining, you know, you just have no idea the impact that you have it on, you know, people. So all of that stuff is, you know, a part of it. And yeah, it's a great responsibility.
One thing we talk about a lot in reference to the modern NBA, there's with younger and younger players coming into the league and identities are harder to establish, but you played at a time where there were so many impact players being drafted. You yourself were an impact player. And yet, even then, the right player has to be in the right situation. And Vancouver struggled. You had great stats, but the team was not necessarily, you know, it wasn't a playoff team. Then you become an all-star in Atlanta. Also, even though one of my great friends in the league, Jason Terry, was there with you, still not a contender. Like, you go through your career, and the only real taste of success, despite your stats and your contributions, is with Team USA. How hard is it for, I don't think fans even realize this, maybe 2K has made this worse, where every player, you know, it's not really like the real NBA. But the importance of fit, teammates, coaching, and system to the overall success of a player sometimes is outside of that player's control.
Yeah, without a doubt. You know, it wasn't until I retired and I was working in the front office for the Kings where I started to understand just how difficult it is to, like, put teams together, put good teams together. You know, the continuity you need between, like, ownership, front office, coaches, you know, and then some of the good fortune you need in drafting players, signing players, making trades. You know, it's not an easy thing at all. Look, I enjoyed my NBA experience. I had a full NBA experience. I think if there was, like, one thing that I said, you know, if I could have changed, I would have, you know, especially early in my career, I would have played on better teams. Like I said, I was, you know, drafted to a expansion team. And, you know, the first 5-6 years of my career, you know, it was just tough us trying to get over the hump of being, I mean, we were like, you know, draft picks playing together, trying to teach each other. So, I mean, that stuff, you know, it's hard. The experience with Team USA, that was, you know, that's like every Olympic, I'm like bringing out pitchers and I go find my gold medal and I do all these things. So, you know, in Sacramento, my first year there, we had a really good year. We, you know, got in the playoffs. So, like, I feel like I had a full career. I'm not disappointed in any aspect of it. That's the one, you know, one aspect I wish I, you know, just had more experiences of, you know, being on, you know, really good teams. But, you know, it's hard. You know, it's really hard. And, you know, teams have to be built to win and built to, you know, go far. I just, you know, I didn't have the experience of being on teams that were situated, like you said, within that fit at that time, you know, when I was a part of them.
Sharif, I have to ask the question, at what point did you realized that the NBA was a business, from the player perspective to understanding, hey, there's a lot more to this than just playing the game of basketball?
Well, like, early in my career, Lionel Hollins, who, you know, he was an assistant with me in Vancouver and took over with the head coach for a time. You know, he explained to me, he's like, look, you know, you love to play basketball, and you do that. And I was complaining to him about something I had to do. I had to go do an appearance and I had to do this and I had to do that. And he said, now all of these other things that, again, like the responsibility, that's the business of the NBA. That's the business of basketball, right? They need you to go do this appearance to help sell tickets, right? You know, you do the Nike shoot or whatever. You do that to help them, you know, sell sneakers. He's like, that's the business of it. The thing you've done your whole life that you love to do, that's the game. You love the game. All of these other aspects are the business. Now, obviously, as I've grown, you know, I retired and I've, you know, worked for the Kings in their front office. I've been here at the league office. You see the business of sport in a, you know, totally different way, and just how, you know, expansive it is. But, you know, early on in my career, you know, Lionel and, you know, some of the other, you know, really important people, Stu Jackson, you know, kind of, you know, with, you know, share those aspects with me for sure.
Does that now, it seems like all of those things that you just talked about build a groundwork for a natural progression into the G League, which when it first started out, some of the teams were, I know San Antonio Popovich used the Austin Toros at the time, used them extensively. They were running the same system. He could pull players from Austin and plug them into the Spurs lineup flawlessly. Like they knew everything ran the same. But some teams were not. There was, you know, some teams took it seriously, some didn't. It seems like now the essentialness of the G League for guys who are coming into a man's league at 19 years old with, and I think the pressures, all that, that you mentioned as far as responsibilities to whatever your shoe deal or whatever the car dealership or the whatever it is that has a deal with the team. And on top of that, you have social media. Where now, plugged into it all the time. And if I was interviewing somebody and they said something that I thought didn't maybe make them look good or the team, I could stop and say, hey, if I run the way you just said it, think about this, and usually go, oh, no, I didn't think about, okay, let me start over. We'll start the tape. All right, new film. We'll start from the beginning. You know, but now it's like they can react to things, and you're 19 and 20, and you're emotional, and we see players getting into trouble with that all the time. How do you, as looking at how to develop players from the ground up with the developmental league, how do you even begin to embrace all of those challenges?
Well, I mean, I think you start with you just try to educate. You know, you start from a, you know, not understanding you're dealing with young people. You know, you try to remember, you know, a while ago, but you try to remember when you were younger, and you start with the idea of educating. You know, what the pros and cons, benefits, trade offs of all these different tools that you have. So, you know, social media. It's a platform, and you can, you know, tell your story and share and engage with people in a way you couldn't before. You know, being in, you know, our leagues have gotten so young. You know, we talked about earlier players coming in more established in years past. Now, you know, younger players are coming in, even high draft picks are coming in with such potential. You know, what and how you use your G League team has become so much more important. And I think educating players, like, it was a time where playing in the G League was, you know, a negative. And I think, you know, the San Antonio Spurs have done, outstanding in helping change that perspective, right? And the number of guys that have spent time in their system. So I start with education and, you know, examples. There's so many examples of, you know, guys who've had success, you know, kind of had road bumps, and you just try to share those with younger players. And I mean, and recognize you're going to still have guys that make mistakes, you know, but you sure. Try to, you know, hopefully limit and get ahead of it with education. And that's so much of what our league is about, that, you know, in the G League, if you need a little bit more time, be it with your game, you know, physically, you know, maturity wise, you can, you know, again, you can be in our league and do things and make mistakes, and it not always be the biggest news, or not always be right. the biggest mistake.
There's a margin for error.
Yeah, no doubt.
Well, it's funny. We had Nancy Lieberman on with us at
here
one point.
Comes. Here
yeah,
comes.
Yeah. I got yelled at Sharif. I got. She made me feel like I was about a half an inch tall when I asked this question. About the age limit in the NBA and how the G League can help, I don't want to say clean up the quality of the NBA, but there's obviously been a lot of criticism on how the game has changed from even the days from when you played. I was always a big proponent of, you know, basketball. When you're playing professional basketball, you're training for a job. Just like you don't see lawyers and accountants leaving early to go early into their field, you know, you're training in college for your profession. And my always thought process was, if you set the age limit higher in the NBA, you can get drafted young, but go into the G League, since you're working with the same coaching staff that you would be with. Because from a one perspective, you're asking an NBA coach not only to try and coach to keep his job and coach to win games and a championship, but now you're also asking to teach the game of basketball, which is almost, I don't want to say it's unfair, but when you're making that type of money, this is what you have to do. But having the G League of being a way as like their minor league system, being able to watch a top draft pick grow, and then when he makes the main roster, it not only helps, you know, I don't want to clean up the level of play on the, in the main rosters of the NBA, but also helps draw positive attention to the G League that you can follow the story of the draft picks. Now, when I brought that up to a couple different people on the show, I got told, you know, who are you to tell an 18, 19 year old, 20 year old kid that they can't go out and make that type of money? I would love to get your perspective on what I just said. Am I being too optimistic? Am I being too, you know, last half full in that type of situation? I would love to get your take on it.
Well, look, I think, you know, what we've even seen in just the last few years of how the landscape of sport and, you know, call it pre-NBA, pre-NFL, you know, all of that has changed. I don't know that it is, you know, I think it's all in a sense professional now. You know, if you look at, you know, NIL and all those things, like it for the most part, it's all operating in a professional realm, and people being, you know, young people being able to market themselves and make money, and there are, you know, pros and cons and consequences to all of this, right? I think the great thing about the G League again is, and our connection to the NBA is that a young player can come into the NBA system and through the G League have an opportunity to grow, develop at his pace, and, you know, be connected to an NBA game, play a game that is similar to the NBA game, be coached, be developed, be helped to go and be ready to be in an NBA game and be productive at his pace. You know, the example I use is in the same draft that I was Jermaine O'Neal. For 5 or 6 years, Jermaine like sat on the bench for Portland. I mean, literally sat on the bench for Portland, right? I mean, he was behind some, you know, Cliff Robinson, Rasheed Wallace, Trent, Dale Davis. I mean, some great, great players. It wasn't until he got to Indiana until he got a chance to like really play. And I mean, that was like his first time consistently playing. Then he became an all-star and a great, great player, right? So, and I think you have those, you know, you have those examples, you have those situations. And I think, you know, for each person, each young man is individual. Like they have to decide what they think is best for them. But, you know, is 100%, you know, cases where, I mean, LeBron James, like he was a high school, you know, player. Like he was a great, great player. You know, Kobe Bryant took him a year or two, but great, great play. So I think it's individual. I think the option that young people have is they should have it. They should have the option to do what they think is right, them and their families to do what they think is right. For them, I think we provided an option like that in the G League that they can, you know, young people can come to the G League, you know, through our team Ignite. And we've had, you know, early on, we've had some really good success with that. But it really should be up to young people. And I think, you know, nowadays it's like all professional. You know, I really do. I don't, you know, I don't see a kid that can go make $1 million through NIL going to college or, you know, going, it's not really much of a, you know, a difference anymore.
How much do you focus on, I mean, I'm sure it's a lot, but I'm really interested in this aspect of the game because the teams that have had sustained success, you mentioned Indiana, when David Morway was the GM, the first thing he did was establish a culture, and his mantra was culture first. Greg Popovich, if you don't get in with the San Antonio culture and what he wants to do, you're not going to be with the Spurs very long. How do you work with kids who maybe come from challenging cultures, whether it's family culture or city, maybe they lived in a bad neighborhood or something where they've got some kind of baggage that they need help dealing with, and putting them on a huge stage is even more pressure. How do you build the young man beyond, you know, off the court as well as the young player on the court?
Yeah, well, look, I think, you know, one, and, you know, this is, you know, my opinion. When we talk about culture, we're talking about people, how we respond to people, how we treat people, how people respond to things, how within an environment, you know, those standards that you set, how they are, you know, guided and developed and nurtured on a daily basis. It's like, you know, it's like a living, breathing thing of how we do things. Now, like we're living and working in a professional environment. So I think there's some, you know, bare minimums that you need from people that, you know, hey, you know, I want to do well, or I want to do this thing, or I want to be a part of the group. I want to, you know, contribute. And I think if you can find those things, and then obviously the abilities that you see for someone to be a part of what you're doing, then you try to meet the person where they are, right? And you try to put resources and tools and people around them that help them, you know, grow and develop. Again, I think that's, you know, again, you know, not to sell the G League, I think that's the great thing about the G League is that you have a kind of a step that you can take, you know, again, and, you know, years past, it was just college, that you went to college and like we knew freshman year was going to be rocky, and then, you know, you got summer and you built from there, and then you built, you know. So I think, you know, in some ways now, you know, you can, you know, a player can go to the G League and, you know, you have that duplicative system, you know, that, you know, it's the same environment, coaches understand who this player is, what he's about, and we can, you know, build. And like if there are bad habits or, you know, bad, certain, you know, tough, rough circumstances, if you have that, you know, again, if you see that inclination in a person that they want to achieve or they want to develop, they want to grow, I think you know those, and that they can, you know, kind of follow the you know, again, those things that are just non-negotiables, things that we have to do to be a part of a professional environment. And, you know, I think you can put in place the resources that's needed to help them, for sure.
Sir, I have to ask this question too. As far as the type of training that goes into the players in the G League, besides just the on the court, are they also teaching how to handle media, how to handle finances, how to handle the different parts of being a professional?
So you know, for our players, you know, I'm saying, you know, we're 31 teams now next year, you know, 24, 25 season, we expect to be 32 teams. So for our league overall, you know, our players have access to the same resources as NBA players. Our players are unionized now. You know, every team has an off-court development person that's for their development. You know, we provide, you know, kind of tuition reimbursement to help them, you know, continue an education. Our younger group, the Ignite team, you know, we pay tuition for them to go to college, you know, now or into the future. We spend a lot of time with them, again, and probably even go deeper on, you know, business of sport, business of basketball, financial literacy, media training, civic engagement, you know, how to be a community, you know, citizen. We spend, you know, we have a full curriculum just on that for those younger players that are like of college age. So yes, we spend, you know, a lot of time. We take it extremely serious. It's important. I'm a firm believer, you're not only growing a basketball player, but first and foremost, you're helping a person grow. And that process, you know, I'm just speaking from personal experience, like that process doesn't stop. Like, you know, who you are at 19 isn't who you're going to be at 25, or it shouldn't be, you know, it's not who you are, you know, 30, you know, and so on. So we want to be a part of that, you know, complete journey.
And at 25, you still need help. you're not who you were at 19, but boy, at 25, it's
own sort of challenge. At 45, you still need help.
Yeah.
Right? So a great question here I have to ask. Has players from the G League come to you about on the court, on how, because you were a class act in the league for many years. You had some trials and tribulations. You had the situation that you had in New Jersey where you signed there and then you had an issue with with physical, and then you played with Sacramento. Have players in the G League that you've spoke with ever come to you and say, hey, how do I handle this situation on court and off court? Have they come to you and talked to you about different types of situations?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when you know, you have guys that are, you know, leaders on their teams or representatives on their teams, or, you know, just guys that, you know, I kind of develop relationship or not. So definitely. And, you know, I think, again, you know, sometimes situations are like nuanced, and, you know, how you deal with it, if they're, you know, like gray area, what's right, what's wrong. And you just try to help guys deal with them and, you know, one, understand kind of the bigger perspective of what's going on and the different people that are impacted and how they work through it and you know, do things in a professional way. Sometimes there's no, you know, it's not right or wrong. It's just the best way you can do it, the best way you can communicate, you know, your feelings, you know, and try not to be detrimental to anyone else.
Last question for me. This is obviously a hot topic in the league with the new ruling being coming about now with resting players, which I think this issue really started with the Spurs when Popovich had Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili had all, and Bruce Bowen, like they had all played like two or three extra seasons because of all the playoff games and wear and tear. And he started giving them rest when they weren't injured, but just trying to keep them fresh for the playoffs. And that seems to have become this massive thing that should never have been let out of the bottle. And now the league is trying to curb it because you have load management players who are young and healthy who just are not playing. Sometimes their choice, sometimes the teams, but the ones who suffer are the fans who paid a lot of money usually to see player A play player B head to head. And then one or both of them don't play. And that's tough. Do you think this step the NBA has taken, is this, I don't know how much you've looked into it. I'm throwing it at you cold turkey, but what do you think of what you know about the solution, the problem and the solution?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, ultimately, you know, these are like collaborative, and this is what I've learned being here at the NBA. These are, you know, collaborative, extensive processes of trying to get to a place of what's right for the game. And, you know, that includes collaborating and working with the players union, you know, folks here within the NBA, the competition committee, the board of governors. So this isn't like, you know, something that's just, you know, kind of, oh, we have a problem now. This evolved into a problem. Here's the thing to fix it. And, you know, I think we've gotten to a place of how to, you know, creating a policy to say, okay, this is some, you know, guidelines around how we, you know, try to protect the game, make the game, continue to have the game growing and being the best that it can. You know, teams are competitive, players are competitive. You know, teams always trying to figure out how to outsmart each other and do things the best way. And, you know, at times, I mean, it's different, you know, plays, you know, how the game is played and, you know, fouls or, you know, all of these things evolve into like how we, you know, just trying to get ahead. And, you know, from time to time, you know, collectively, I don't think that it's just the league itself coming in to, you know, put a policy in place. Collectively, you have the NBA overall, like, coming together to say, okay, here's, you know, kind of a policy, some guidelines that we should work with that we think are collectively fair. Because if you have, you know, team A doing, you know, X and, you know, team B trying to adhere to it, you know, it gets to the point where it isn't, you know, it isn't fair. And then, you know, ultimately, like, it's not the best thing for, like, fans and people who, you know, just love watching the game.
We had Dominique Wilkins on a while back, and I remember a game when I was a kid watching him play where he was carried off the court on a stretcher in the first half and came back and scored 25, and they won in the second half. And we were joking about that, like, man, now it seems like somebody missed 6 or 8 weeks after. And he was like, all right, tape it up, let's go.
Look, I mean, different, I think it's, era. Yeah, I mean, definitely it's a different era. You know, I think, you know, it's so much more, you know, scrutiny that, you know, we deal with to, like, you know, protect players, and so many more voices, again, there's so much more that goes into, like, these decisions. And, you know, again, that's why I think you know, you get everybody coming together, players, league, you know, team, coaches, everyone, you know, getting together to say, okay, how can we, you know, best create a policy that, that helps us continue to have the NBA be such a great league.
Sharif, my last question for you, I know we're going to wrap this up. The NBA G League has grown tremendously over the last 5-10 years. Would you like to see the G League sort of, you know, as the TV contracts and the distribution contracts of the NBA continue to grow out, would you like to see the G League get a little bit more TV time and a little bit more exposure?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, but I think it's, you know, the right exposure, the right times, highlighting our players, telling the stories of our players, you know, featuring our games in the right way. Something that, you know, I think we've made tremendous progress. You know, you see us now on, you know, ESPN and NBA TV and, you know, different platforms. So I think we made tremendous progress. Obviously, we want to, you know, continue to grow and continue to, you know, highlight our players and, you know, make sure that their families and fans and the local communities, you know, large majority of our teams have, you know, local broadcast deals. So we want that, and we think it will. You know, this is, you know, just 22 years now of the G League. So it will continue to evolve, continue to grow, and especially as, like, the media landscape continues to evolve, we expect, you know, our league and, you know, partnerships and opportunities will grow as well.
All right, Bill. So that was Sharif Abdul-Rahim. I think one of our probably better interviews. I thought it was, I thought he's such a smart guy. And I think he's the right guy to help lead the G League. A lot of times, either owners or former players who try to transition to office go off of their name value. But Sharif has really earned his role. Like he discussed on how he was the general manager of the Sacramento Kings for a little while. And the importance of the G League and how the G League is growing into as an important system as baseball's minor league system.
Well, it really is because, and I mentioned this to him, and he talked about it, the fact that younger and younger players coming into the league, you got to have somewhere, they need a foundation. And if it's not going to be, you know, 2-3 years of college, it's nice to have another, it's still a professional environment. I mean, Jalen Green made $60 million playing or $600,000 playing for the Ignite for 1 year. So they're still making really good money and they're still professionals and they're learning, in particular, as teams embrace their G League teams and do like San Antonio did from the beginning, which is run the same systems. And the Rio Grande Valley Vipers do this with for the Rockets. They run a similar system so that a player who's playing there can get called up and it's, they already know the system, right? You're just playing with better players, your pro players instead of your G League players. So I think it's a great system. It's only going to be more important going forward. And I think as teams truly embrace the possibilities that exist with a true farm system, I think it's going to be critically important to the success of teams going forward.
I think it's very important too. And I hope everyone really enjoyed the interview with Sharif Abdul-Rahim. We're going to be adding some more features, including that's going to include the G League this upcoming season here on the Hardwood Huddle. And Bill, that's our first episode back, our season premiere, talk about the Lillard trade and the effect that it has on the Eastern Conference. Next episode, we'll break down the Western Conference and we'll see what kind of special guests we have joining us then. For Bill Lindgren, I'm Randy Zellier from backsportspage.com. Bill didn't put the, I wanted him to put Yoda on there because he's our he's our basketball Jedi Knight.
Jedi.
I was waiting for it. We appreciate you joining us on this episode of the Hardwood Huddle. We'll see you next time.